Bus Boys and Poets. More information and how to RSVP can be found online, ips-dc.org/events/counteringamericanfascism.
WPFW, your station for jazz and justice, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Peace, this is Atan Thomas, and you're listening to WPFW Washington, your station for jazz and justice.
This is a journey.
Would you join me, please, in welcoming me?
Redeem a full of culture.
I got so much trouble on my mind. Refuse to lose. Here's your ticket.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo. Bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day, or Oscar Robertson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
Welcome to The Collision. This is where I say he's Atan Thomas, I'm Dave Zirin. He's Chuck Modiano, I'm Dave Zirin. Here at your home for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 WPFW, where we are trying to change the world one broadcast at a time. We have so much to discuss this week. I don't even know where to get started. Chuck, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. How about yourself, sir?
I'm doing great, and we're joined by Atan Thomas via phone. How are you, Atan?
I'm doing pretty good. How y'all doing today?
We're doing all right, but Atan, you got to tell the listeners, why are you joining us by phone?
Because we had a storm yesterday, and I have no power. So the power's going to come back today, but hey, it's just part of this crazy weather. We go from having record-breaking heat to a storm. What are you going to do?
Yeah, what are you going to do? It just is the way it is right now. Well, we're glad you're safe. You're glad your family's safe. You're glad you're able to come with us here this week on The Collision. It's wonderful to hear your voice. And Atan Thomas, we have so much to talk about this week. I definitely want to talk about a lot of issues going on in the NBA and the WNBA. We're going to talk, and I know you're only with us for the first half hour, and I want to get to those. But one thing we have not discussed, Atan, and I haven't discussed this with you either, Chuck, is I really want to talk about this. And I know everything's going on in the world with the RNC and political wackiness across the board. Will Biden step down? Won't he step down? But the story that has captured my brain, Atan, Bronny James. Bronny James, the son of LeBron James, 55th overall pick in the NBA draft. He'll be playing with LeBron with the Lakers. First father and son to ever play in the NBA at the same time, let alone on the same team. And last night, Bronny had his first good game as a pro in the summer league. I mean, it's been a disaster for him so far. But last night, young Mr. Bronny, after 1 year at USC, he scored 12 points, 9 in the first half. 2 of 5 from three, hit a clutch three-pointer. Atan, what are your thoughts, especially somebody like yourself who has as a son who's a top basketball player? What are your feelings as you've seen the LeBron Bronny coming together in the NBA? And where do you think this is going?
I mean, for one thing, he's going to be under a microscope, and it's a little bit unfair since he was the 55th pick. You know what I mean? They're treating it like he was a top five pick, and that's like the level of expectation. But, you know, he's a 55th pick. So usually when you're picked that late in the second round, your expectations are usually that you're going to play in the G League most of the time.
Right.
But that's the case with Bronny. So it's a little bit tough. You know what I mean? It's a bit tough the way that he's under a microscope, but it had to be expected. But yeah, he had a good game yesterday. He actually scored more than LeBron scored against Serbia. I mean, I think he scored 12, LeBron might score 11. But yeah, I mean, I think it's just going to be like that for Bronny, unfortunately, you know. And it's you're going to have a lot of strong reactions about everything that he does. And again, that should have been just expected.
From what you've seen, do you see a player in him? I mean, that's a big debate right now. Do you see NBA talent in this young man?
Well, yeah, but also remember, he was the 55th pick. So it's like, what bar are you putting him to? He's not LeBron. You know what I mean? He wasn't the first pick in the draft. He was the 55th pick. And so, I think you have to give him a chance to grow. You have to give him a chance to learn. I mean, on the flip side, you know, you have, Alex Saar, who had a very tough game. You know, he's the second pick. And I think the same thing with him. He's 19 years old. You have to give him a chance to grow and to learn. It's tough because this is a league where you want everything to happen immediately. You know, of course, the Wizards do. You know, it's been a little bit down for a little while, so I understand that. But, you know, you have to give things a chance. Like, this is the second or third summer league game. You know what I mean? Let them get their bearings. Do you remember how Wembanyama looked his first couple of games in the summer league last year? People don't even remember it, but he looked terrible. You know what I mean? And look at him playing now. Like, just give him a minute. That's what I think. Just give him a minute.
So, Etan, you're saying that in our microwave culture, everybody wants to see results immediately, and no one has the patience to sit through the process.
Not at all. I mean, but that's just the way that it is. You know, I mean, with Bronny, I mean, it's like he's getting the coverage like he was the, you know, top three pick. And that's tough. Like, every single game, I think I even saw one time it was on, it might have been on SportsCenter or something like that, that he won a Call of Duty contest. I'm like, wow, y'all really reporting everything about Bronny. You know what I mean? So when you're, you know, under that level of a microscope, it's just, you know, it's not, that's just the way that it is. I don't know. It shouldn't be, but that's the way that it is. And they're going to report everything about him when he plays bad, when he plays good, when he, you know, whatever he does. It's just, that's going to be the talk.
Yeah, and before I go to you, Chuck, I think it has to be said that one of the reasons why it is such an obsession is not just him being LeBron's son, but also the fact that we've seen him grow up with all of these little clips over the years. I mean, the first time I remember him shooting a ball, I mean, he was barely big enough, bigger than the ball itself. So we've watched him grow up. And then you can't take away anything from the incredible physical accomplishment of LeBron playing long enough and at such a level that he can play with his son. I mean, that to me is kind of awe-inspiring when you think about the wear and tear that basketball puts on the human body. Chuck, your thoughts on Bronny James, what we're seeing, the potential, and how we should be thinking about this?
I think Etan laid it out how we should be thinking. We should think about him the same way we might think about Jay Scrubb, who was the 55th pick 4 years ago and, played a few minutes here and played a few minutes there. If you go through the history of the number 55 pick and after, many of the people don't even make the team. To be quite honest with you, and those who do make the team, they're usually riding the bench or they're in the G League and they don't play that much. So I think that's the fair bar to look at him. You just don't have that many second rounders, and especially late second rounders, come in and make a huge contribution. Of course, there are exceptions to that rule, and you always point to those exceptions to those rules, but. Yeah, look at him like any other 55th pick and keep your expectations right there.
I think it's changed a little bit with Nikola Jokic being a second-round pick. A lot of contributors now come out in the second round, partly because there's less certainty as to who is a good and who is a negative player. So that's a part of it that we really can't get around either, is that there's more variance than there used to be. Would you agree with that, Etan? That it's not like the old days where it's like everybody in the top 10 you knew is like a made person pretty much, and then the second round was whatever, that these second round picks have actually got more value? I mean, you see that in some of these trades where it's like 6 second round picks for this player. And you think like, wow, these second round picks, they have real value.
Yeah, but are they getting the media coverage? are they on top of SportsCenter? Are they getting all the articles as a second round pick of any number? I mean, 55th pick, you don't hear any coverage about the 55th pick. You just don't. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a little bit of a, you know, an unfair bar that Bronny is being measured, by and measured with. But, you know, again, it was expected, but it's still not quite there.
No, not quite there. But you know, it can get there. Like you said, we are in those first days, and I took some criticism for this on social media. I see an NBA player in this young man, and people were saying to me, "Oh, that's ridiculous. You're just a LeBron stan. You know, you don't know." But I don't know. Maybe I'm sucked in a little bit by having watched him his entire life, but I think there's a there, like somebody at the very least who can play some serious defense. And who knows? He's such a young person. Who knows how he's going to develop?
I mean, I think I think he's going to develop just fine. It's just a matter of it's just not going to be quick enough for everybody else. I think that's pretty much what it boils down to. I think that it's just interesting when you look at the world of social media and what people want to focus on, and they're hell bent on focusing on it regardless of, you know, the facts. And regardless, so push Bronny to the side for a second, looking at, you know, just Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese. Regardless of how they play, you have the one side that is going to be completely all in on Caitlin Clark and sing her praises, and the other side is going to be completely all in on Angel Reese and sing her praises. And sometimes it doesn't even matter what happens in between. So if you see Angel Reese go for, you know, 13, 14, however many double-doubles she had, you saw the other people who are against her, they say, she's stat padding. You know what I mean? They were losing. You know what I mean? Like, man, y'all ain't ever happy. And on the flip side with Caitlin Clark, you know, she gets, you know, what, the record-breaking 19 assists or something like that. And then it's like, how many turnovers she had. They still lost the game. Look at her shooting. So people are going to be dug in their position regardless, you know, and that kind of bleeds over to what we see in the world as well. No matter what you see, no matter what spectacle happens, the things don't add up or everything like that, and I'm making a very loose reference here, people are going to be like, oh, this person's a hero, this person survived this, this person is, you know, it doesn't matter any of the details that still don't add up. So that's the way of the world.
Wow. And you mentioned Caitlin Clark getting a WNBA record 19 assists the other night. That comes with news that the league is signing a $200 million TV deal. Mm-hmm. Huge step forward for the league. Mm-hmm. And really because of Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, the numbers speak for themselves as far as the interest they have brought to the league. But oftentimes it's discussed as if it's just Caitlin Clark, which doesn't quite sit too well with me, because Reese is an attraction. People show up to watch her play.
Well, Reese is more than an attraction. She is right now, I think, tied with Aja Wilson with the rebounding lead. You know, the double-doubles people talked about, but I almost thought that distracted from the fact that she may break the all-time WNBA record for rebounds, Yolanda Griffith, 11.9, in her rookie year. And then when you look at May, she was averaging 8.2 rebounds, and she'd been almost like on a 13 rebound tear, that it looks like she will have the WNBA record this year. So this is not just simply, you know, they were an attraction, they came out of college. She's going to break one of the, well, I don't want to say yet, because Aja Wilson-McDonough tears so much that after Angel Reese surpassed her, they're like around tied now. One of them are going to have the new record. That's a big deal. And the fact that her field goal percentage went way up, almost 10 points from her first month, and that her rebounding percentage went way up shows that she took about like half a month to adjust to the league. And now you're seeing her ball out. And at the same time, you have Caitlin Clark, who probably adjusted in the last seven games. And what Caitlin Clark did to adjust is she's not Steph Curry. People need to get that out of their heads. Get logo 3 out of your head, because Steph Curry shoots 43%. And prior to 43%, prior to Steph Curry, we called those dumb shots. That's what we did. We said, that's a stupid shot, and the coach would yank you. But then Steph starts throwing these things from all over the court and still hitting at 43%. Well, it's not a dumb shot if you can do that. But Caitlin Clark's hitting 33%. So if you're hitting 33%, maybe you need to stop doing that. You're hurting the team, including turnovers. But there's one thing that you are maybe the most brilliant person in the WNBA right now. And if it's for Reese, it's for rebounding, it's for her passing. It's her court vision. And you can see right away when college that was her greatest gift. But you weren't using these gifts, even though you have these great players around you. And she started doing that. She became a facilitator, helping get good players open shots. So you're starting to see her adapt to her strengths. And the more she does that, and the more she stays a facilitator and maybe pulls back on these long threes, in my opinion, until she could get her shooting percentage to where it needs to be. Now we're seeing that adjustment. And so that's a welcome adjustment as well.
No, it is. Etan, what's it tougher to adjust as when you go to another level, like being a guard or a front court player? What's the tougher adjustment?
I mean, both are tough, but, you know, it's hard to compare now until, you know, from before, because the physicality in the league is a little bit different now. I mean, before, if you're a big man, you're adjusting to playing against Shaq and Alonzo Mourning and Ben Wallace, and you know what I mean? It's so different. I'm not going to name anybody today. I don't want to throw any shade, but there is a difference. But I think that's a big difference. But I mean, I think that the thing about it is, and this is what I was referencing before about the adjustment. Both players have to make adjustments. Both players are going to have good games and not so good games. They're going to have different things that they do well and they don't do well. The problem is the different level of coverage when you have, I think Chuck even tweeted it, where you have Caitlin Clark who pushes a player, and then she's described as being passionate, and she's tried as being, look at the tenacity, look how, you know what I mean? But then if Angel Reese does the same thing, she's called a thug. You know what I mean? I think that's what that difference in coverage is the part that have really rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, but then also emboldened a lot of people to be more dug in their position and then weaponize Caitlin Clark. So a lot of people, it's not really hard to see, but a lot of people are cheering for Caitlin Clark for the wrong reasons. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. They're cheering her wrong, not for her greatness, not for her ability to you know make threes or, you know, break records of assists or, you know, facilitate and all that stuff. That's not what they're cheering for. You know what I mean? They're so cheering. You have a white player that's doing well and they want to celebrate her whiteness. I mean, and that's it. I mean, you have to call it what it is. You know, you saw that in college when they were playing. You saw that in the write-ups, you know, they were the way it was a lot of people make the, comparison about, you know, with Bird and Magic, and they say, no, this could be, it's a good thing. I was like, yeah, but I don't know. With social media, it's weaponized a little bit more right now. You get to see a little bit more of the evil and the racism and everything like that with social media. Now, if they had social media back then with Bird and Magic, I'm sure you would say a whole lot, and it would be, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I can't even imagine, but they didn't. So now you see it, and so that makes it a lot different.
Yeah, and you're seeing statistical racism. And statistical racism, in my opinion, when you manipulate stats to say something that isn't. So when Angel Reese started balling out, getting 14 rebounds a game, you started seeding these grids from the Angel Reese fans, and it would have like 10 stats listed, right? And it would just be like, oh, she only does rebounding. And they would have 8 of the 10 stats would all be scoring related, right? It'd be like free throw percentage, field goal percentage, 3-point percentage. I'm like, wait, you just have a bunch of scoring. You know, we could just roll that up into one true shooting percentage and keep it as one, because now you're manipulating people to think that she's better in all these categories. What if I took Angel Reese's rebounding and said total rebounding, offensive rebounding, defensive rebounding percentage, and now we got three categories there? Also, you conveniently left out that she's going to shatter the record of WNBA turnovers at 5.5. Do I believe she has 5.6 turnovers a game? Do I believe that will improve in the future as she gains familiarity with her teammates and learns the league? Absolutely, I do. And she will. But right now, if you want to root for her, root for her. When you come back and you denigrate other players, and particularly black players or Olympic players who are clearly better and clearly more deserving, now I got a response. Now you're not letting me enjoy the great passing of Caitlin Clark because you're acting like a fool. And now I have to come back and say that you're acting like a fool. And I'm going to end you on the one example. And I don't want to like put anyone in Twitter, but it's like there's a mob that does this. If it was one or two people, I wouldn't say anything. There's a mob that does it. And they say that Caitlin Clark would have so many more assists if her teammates weren't so incompetent. And she could have 19 assists. And someone will show me that Leah Boston yesterday, who shot 11 for 14, a 79% shooting percentage, she got a feed from a great behind-the-back pass. She was fouled, and she didn't make it. And you're going to literally have Caitlin Clark fans say her teammates didn't step up on the day her teammates converted 19 assists, including some crazy three-pointers. Even when you set the record for assists, they're going to find a flaw, as if every point guard who's ever played the game hasn't had to deal with people not converting. Okay, that's just part of the game. But these fans are so psychotic, a portion of them are so psychotic, you have to always have your defense up, because there's a difference between cheering for Caitlin Clark and denigrating other players.
And it's not just fans. It's the media as well. I mean, I don't have to put anybody on blast. I was just listening a few days ago, and the media was, and the media person, he was saying that, oh, you know, it should have been Caitlin Clark on the Olympic team. Who do you think is going to carry the torch coming out? Is it going to be, you know, LeBron? Is it going to be Simone Biles? Is it going to be Steph? It should be Caitlin Clark. They kept reinserting that, and they said, oh, but we're watching Diana Taurasi that's been there. I was like, wait a minute. See, to your point, that's when I start having a problem. Diana Taurasi, she is a sixth, what is it? Is this the sixth time Olympian? Is he going to throw dirt on her? Come on now, don't do that. If you're Caitlin Clark, cool, but you don't have to, like, go ahead and talk bad and you know what I mean, other players who are proven legends in this game. That's just not right.
Go ahead, Daisy.
Oh, no, finish your sentence, because then I got the big follow-up.
Not only proven legends, but Diana Taurasi has won a whole slew of Olympics. She brings that knowledge. She's like an extra coach. She has played in Russia. She's 5 Russian championships to like 7 Euro championships. I might have them reversed. 7 Russian championships. She has like forget Bill Russell. She got like 18, 19 when you count UConn and when you count WNBA, when you count Russia and you count the Euro League. She knows the league. She knows the opponents. She's played with most of these players who are in the Olympics. You're bringing in that continuity. You're bringing in that knowledge. Caitlin Clark can't do that. Not only that, when you look at all the point guards, they all have turnover rates of about 2 a game. So you're going to tell me you're going to bring in somebody who has 5.6 turnovers a game in a new environment with players that she never played before and risk that as a point guard? Hell no. Your job is to shoot the ball, and your job is to take care of the ball. She's not qualified now on merit alone, not close to qualified, but she will be next time.
All right, well, let's go to the big question then to Etan, and then I'll throw it to you, Chuck. Who's your rookie of the year as of right now, Angel Reese or Caitlin Clark? You're gonna put one out, or you just want to wait to the end of the year?
I mean, for me, honestly, I wouldn't mind if they did co-rookie of the year. I wouldn't mind. That's me. That's the, you know what I mean? That's honestly what I think. I wouldn't mind. I mean, there's a case that you can make for either one of them. But that would be my vote.
Yeah, I got to see how it ends up. I mean, I feel like this is truly neck and neck. Chuck, what's your call on this?
If you asked me a week ago, I'd say Angel Reese easy, because I saw not just that she's leading league of rebounding, but that she made this incredible leap from May, right? Like I said, 8.2 rebounds in May, and then she was on this 14-a-game rebound tear, and her shooting percentage went way up. So a week ago or 10 days ago, I'm like, easy Angel Reese. Now I'll say it's kind of neck and neck because now Caitlin's turned the corner by being a facilitator. So we will have to wait to the end of the year. You can't judge it just now, but I think it'll be a lot. I think Caitlin will decide her future if she stays the route to be that facilitator. I think then she improves her chances. And then we're going to see what Angel does the rest of the way. But she's also doing it with Camila Cardoza, who's a great offensive rebounder as well, because Angel Reese says she's making her mark on the offensive boards, grabbing like 5 a game. And Tom Thomas knows something about that, grabbing 5 a game. Yeah, she got a little Tom Thomas in her, Angel Reese does. What do you think of Tom?
No, I'm a fan. You know what I mean? I love how they play. I love how they, you know, feed off each other. Hey, I'm a fan.
Yeah, me too. Well, Etan, I know we're at least close to you needing to go and deal with the power outages at the Thomas house, and what a pain that is. But I can't let you go. I can't end this discussion without talking about a team that's close to your heart and close to my heart, and that's the New York Knicks. And this is a big one for you, Etan, because I know you're a Knicks guy. I also know when you were in the league, you were a tremendous union guy with the National Basketball Players Association. Mm-hmm. And here you have Jalen Brunson, the great Jalen Brunson, the hero of New York, the most important New York City basketball player in years, cementing a kind of legend for taking much less money than he could have gotten for the purposes of the team having more money to sign players to make sure that they're a competitive team. Now, on the one hand, as a Knicks fan, it's an amazing thing that he's not hamstringing the entire operation, that he's going to be able to play with the Nova Knicks. They're going to re-sign Mikal Bridges. A lot of cool things come out of him taking less. And let's be honest, the amounts of money we're talking about are just so stratospheric. What are we really talking about here in terms of sacrifice? But that being said, he is sacrificing a lot of money. And that has some union people a little wigged out because that's not the best thing they want to see. But it has Knicks fans just euphoric at the prospects of the future. Etan, what were your thoughts when you heard this news?
I mean, I'm just not crazy about it because that's not what the management does. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I mean, it shouldn't be on the player to be able to take less. I mean, a lot of times when they broadcast what the players make, you know, and everybody is thinking, oh, okay, well, if they take less, no big deal. But broadcast what the teams make and what they can take, you know what I mean, and the sacrifice that they can make. But it's never put on the team to make the sacrifice. Do you know what I mean? I'm not a big fan of that. You know, I've heard the chatter with different players before, you know, and they kind of urge them to take less and they applaud them when they do. And I don't know. That's not good business. I mean, I think that, you know, he has earned the right to whatever it is that he can earn, you know, in his contract. He was phenomenal last year. I mean, the case that you can make for him to even be, you know, on the Olympic team. I mean, I you know, if they didn't start getting injured, we could have seen a whole different playoff for them. You know, and of course, when you only play 5 or 6 people, but that's a whole different topic. But I mean, but still, he played phenomenal. So I don't like putting the onus on him to be able to do that. And the, you know, that's not a big fan of it, to be honest with you.
No, I hear you. Chuck, your thoughts when you heard this news?
I don't like it at all. I don't like the Knicks franchise is worth $6.6 billion. James Dolan is worth $2 billion. I don't know how the Larry Bird rights and exceptions with luxury taxes work exactly today. But I know if that's an issue, then they can afford it. Asking Jalen Brunson to give back over $100 million is a terrible precedent because all these fans, they're going to be asking future players to do the same. Why don't we have owners to do the same? And if you have a structure that is not allowing billionaires to pay folks, well, then you need a new structure, okay? Then you need to be more like Major League Baseball. For years, I championed the NBA because they would allow you through Larry Bird rights to sign your own players at a much higher salary and play the luxury tax. Now, I'm going to tell you, whatever those luxury taxes are, the New York Knicks can afford all those luxury taxes. So I don't even care if it tripled or quadrupled. I don't want Jalen Brunson to be eating money. I want James Dolan to be eating money.
Right.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. It's on.
That's the part that they never show. They don't show how much that the teams make. They don't show how much, you know what I mean, that they could sacrifice. They don't put it on them. And that's the part. But, hey, I mean, I think, you know, on the flip side, we're talking about the prospects of the Knicks organization, and the Knicks fans have to be excited about what's going to happen next year. Hey, look, you know, I mean, and you kind of want to temper the excitement because we know emotional Knicks fans, but, my grandfather was an emotional Knicks fan, my cousins, my uncle, everybody emotional Knicks fan, so I get it. But still, even with that, Knicks fans should feel very, very good about next year.
I will go even further than that and say that
you
the Knicks...
You always go further, though, Dave. You always want to go further.
I always do. The Knicks have the best chance in the entire NBA to dethrone the Boston Celtics, and I think that if they stay healthy, they have the people to do it. There, that's what I'm saying.
I'll throw Philly in there if they're healthy. You know what I mean? You got to throw them in there. How do you think the Paul George teaming with Embiid and, you know what I mean, Max? How do you think that's going to work? Because on paper, I think they look pretty good, but that's, again, on paper.
Yeah, that's a terrific question, because the best big three in the NBA right now, I think you have to say, is in Philadelphia with Embiid, Tyrese Maxey, and Paul George. That's the best big three, I think, in the NBA. And they filled out with some good players on the side recently. They've made some good signings. They re-signed our old DC guy, Kelly Oubre, very happy to see that. They've got some other pieces that are interesting on that. You have to talk about health, though, with Philadelphia, because we know Embiid's health history. We know Paul George's recent health history. So right. those are big factors that are looming for Philadelphia. I just trust the Knicks more. You know, the depth is just so exciting to me. Mikal Bridges on this team is so exciting to me. I just, you know, barring injury, I think the Sixers are left a little bit in the dust, a little too over-dependent on those big three, and the Knicks are going to take it to the Celtics and show them the true meaning of basketball.
Hey, Woo! That sounds great. It's going to be great. And it's going to be great for New York to have that same energy coming off of last season, going in to this next season with even more firepower. So, yes, looking forward to it.
Exactly. And there's no question that when Jalen Brunson did this contract, he was thinking in his head, I can also make money by being an icon in New York City, which is a very special kind of thing to be.
Yeah, so, but I don't think you have to do that in order to be that icon. I think he was already the icon, but I hear your point.
Yeah, I'm not saying that that's the way you should have thought it through, but certainly some other factors there as opposed to giving up that money in, shall we say, a secondary market. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Because New York, you know what it's like in New York. We haven't won a championship in over 50 years, but still, when that team is good, that city rocks. It absolutely rocks.
And it's not that they're just good. They're New York City good. They're bringing back the 1990s defense. This team is built on defense and playing together. The Villanova Knicks have such an incredible chemistry. And Anobi comes in, plays defense. We're like one little piece away. And I think we lost Hartenstein, who was incredible, played incredibly. And so we need that back because Mitchell Robinson is going to get hurt, right? We know he's going to get hurt at some point. That's happened. I think they'll take care of that. And I would entertain, trading Julius Randle, not because I don't like Julius Randle. I'm not one of those Julius Randle haters. I'm just saying fit-wise, I think the way the chemistry we saw maybe doesn't fit. And I don't think Julius Randle is the type who's going to come off the bench as a sixth man. He would want to do that. But I think maybe there's a trade in the works there and you get that center.
Very well put indeed. Well, Etan, you've been more than generous with your time here. I know you've got some things you got to deal with where you are. Much respect to you for joining us, man. Really appreciate it. Best to the family and all that stuff. Any parting words, Eitan, for the audience?
Well, no, it's always great, you know, talking to you guys. And honestly, you know, when you have a whole power outage and you're sitting in the dark, sometimes it's a good release. You know what I mean? It's a good distraction to come and talk with you guys about everything sports. You know, we didn't even get to politics. I don't want to stay and talk if y'all going to touch on politics, but yeah, it's always
great. We were going to touch a little on politics, actually, after the break.
Yeah? Yeah. You know what? Yeah. Let's go to a break and I'm going to hang.
Do it.
Let's do it. Yo, let's go to break right now here on The Collision. This is WPFW 89.3 FM, changing the world one broadcast at a time.
Funky drummer, music hitting your heart, cause I know you got a soul. Listen, if you're missing y'all, swinging while I'm singing, giving what you're getting, knowing what I'm knowing, while the black band's sweating in the rhythm I'm rolling. Gotta give us what we want, gotta give us what we need. Our freedom of speech is freedom of death. We got to fight the power that be. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power.
We are back here on The Collision. He's Eitan Thomas. He's Chuck Modiano. I'm Dave Zirin, 89.3 FM, WPFW, your home for jazz and justice, changing the world one broadcast at a time. This is the second part of our show. Eitan Thomas is staying with us. And I wanted to start our political discussion here by announcing that we have news that with a heavy heart, a true legend passed away. On July 16th, and that's Dr. Bernice Johnson Regan, who many of you might know as one of the founders of the SNCC Singers, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, a founder of Sweet Honey in the Rock, one of the great freedom singers of her time, but also a brilliant archivist, author, musical scholarship and history, I mean, a mentor, an activist, and as Katia Stitt, one of our leaders here at WPFW called her a cultural warrior of the highest order. We here at The Collision want to offer condolences to her family, friends, and all who loved her and all whom she loved and inspired, a true giant. And, you know, Eitan, it is sobering when we lose people who were part of that generation, and we're losing them a lot these days, who were part of that generation who helped form, you know, the most important, one of the most important social movements in the history of certainly this country, like Dr. Bernice Johnson Regan. It's sobering when they pass, partly for me, because we need these movements today so desperately.
Yeah, and that's definitely true. I mean, and everything that she stood for and everything she fought for, I mean, it's one of those things where when you look at the current climate, and the political climate, and you see what's at stake, and then you lose people that fought, you know, so long and so hard, you know, for certain things to happen in this country and for this country to, you know, to turn the corner on, whether it's civil rights, whether it's women's rights, whether it's, you know what I mean, whatever it is, and you see us going backwards, it could really even be more disheartening. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's a tough thing because sometimes you got to turn off politics because it's so disgusting. I mean, I'll just be honest.
Yes.
Sometimes I have to turn off politics because it's so disgusting. And what I'm seeing, and what I'm seeing people championing, and what they are pushing for, and you know, it's like you're living in the Twilight Zone. I mean, I don't know. Younger listeners don't know what Twilight Zone is, but you know, you're living in like an alternate universe where everybody is pushing for this. And it's like, wow, well, you know what I mean? Like that would be crazy if that really happened. But then you look and it's really reality. So those are the things that it makes, you know, it's a tough time right now in the country. Not even going to sugarcoat it. It's a very tough time.
No, absolutely. And you lose people like Dr. Bernice Johnson Regan. I mean, you feel that weight a little bit more. I mean, and partly that's a tribute to how much weight people like Dr. Bernice Johnson Regan carried. It's like that line from Gangstar, who's going to take the weight? Like now that Dr. Bernice Johnson Regan has passed, who is going to take that weight? Because that, I think, is the question that faces all of us. at this very, very pernicious time in political history. Chuck Modiano, your thoughts?
Well, you know, Dr. Benise Johnson comes out of SNCC. You know, you talk about her, you talk about Ella Baker. SNCC has never gotten the attention in general that it should. The people who are taking their weight are the, and that was happening. SNCC was organizing on college campuses all over the place, all over America. The people who are taking the weight are the young people on those college campuses and the young people in the street that we've seen in encampments in this year, that we've seen uprising after George Floyd. So I think we got the young people doing it. What's happening is you're just maybe not getting maybe and the institutional support. But I think people are it's a more leaderless movement, but I think the young people are stepping up just as they did in SNCC. The fact is we don't know 99% of the names of all the young people who organized during SNCC. So I think that's how I look at it.
You know, Atan, one of the things I've always respected about your work is that when you've done panels, when you've done events, you've always brought on that older generation and given them shine. And, you know, this is a very transitory moment because like Chuck said, there are a lot of young people right now completely trying to find a way forward politically, yet not finding a lot of avenues to express themselves because of the way our political system is set up, the kind of candidates being put forward. You know, just wanted to put that out there. I mean, you and I are both parents of kids about to enter this world, in a more formal adult way. And, you know, it's sobering to think about what they're going to face. And it's sometimes scary to think about the kind of role that we're going to need to play to help really direct them through what could be some very difficult times.
Yeah, I definitely agree. But, you know, one of the things about, you know, young people right now is you can't lie to them. You know what I mean?
Like, good point.
They're spreading information, you know, whether it's on Instagram or TikTok or whatever, and they're doing the work that the news, you know, channels are not doing. And that's the thing. I mean, if there was a silver lining and everything that's going on is the way that the young people are really communicating and spreading information. I mean, I'm sometimes looking at it like just proud, you know, being like, wow, look at them. You know, they'll say, no, this was just reported on CNN, but this is really, you know, they didn't tell the whole story. And this is, and they'll put on these long, intricate, you know, and it's interesting because then when you see, and this is one thing that I don't like that, you know, politicians on both sides do, is they try to dismiss young people if they don't agree with them, that they just don't understand. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you just don't know. They're so uninformed. And I'm listening, I'm like, no, they sound pretty informed. You know, they're giving, they're citing sources. They're telling where they're getting their information from. No, it's just that you just don't agree with them. And that part, as far as that's been the encouraging part for me throughout this political process, is seeing how the young people are communicating and kind of taking a torch. So while you might not have like a one person stepping in as the leader, like you have it, you know what I mean? But you have a lot of young leaders who are all using their voices, and that's encouraging to see.
Yet the young people are correct on Israel-Palestine, the ones who come out and protested. The young people are proving themselves correct in terms of the kind of presidential candidate it's going to take from the Democratic Party to inspire them to vote. Hopefully people are waking up to that, because let's face it, Chuck, without young people, I mean, the Democratic Party doesn't even really operate as an electoral party. And if Republicans, you know, they've got their voters locked up, but yeah, the Democrats do not.
Well, I think they can't lie to you anymore because of social media. They can't lie. So when somebody says the young people don't know what they're doing, they're all misinformed. No, the young people have the truth. And you're mad because you can't lie directly to people and get away with it. You know, there's this clip going around. I don't know if you saw it, Aaron Magruder, but some, it's making its rounds on social media. And he's talking in 2003, and he's scared about that there were mass protests for the Iraq war, and it wasn't even on TV. You couldn't have had it on. It wasn't on TV. And he made this point. He said, if Martin Luther King existed today, you wouldn't even know who he was. That is what he's saying. Now, we could debate if that's true or not. He said he was talking about the consolidation of media since 1996, that 10 people control media, and that there were blackouts of huge protests. And that would be the case today with the Free Palestine protest without social media. That same media that blunted the Iraq war, that would not let a Tom Thomas even write an article about the Iraq war, even though he's a pro basketball player, until Dave Zirin comes on and is Post Gazette, what is it? Prince George Post Gazette. That's the climate in 2003. So between social media and the young people, we're going to tell the truth in ways that wasn't broadcast in the 2003 Iraq war.
Wow. No, very, very, very well put on that. I mean, I got to say that, Etan, when young people get together, this is one of the things that Dr. Bernice Johnson-Reagan understood. It's like when young people get together and organize, they're organizing for the future. And I see 78-year-old pushing 79-year-old Donald Trump. You know, I look at Joe Biden and I think to myself, are they thinking about what the planet can look like in 30 years? You know, are they thinking about how safe the world can be in 30 years? Are they caring about issues like nuclear proliferation? And the media question is so important because I think media consolidation is so dangerous. You know, during the 1950s and 60s, during the civil rights movement, I'm not saying mainstream newspapers were great back then, because they were not. They, you know, they were written by white men in ways that were problematic, to put it mildly. But, and I got to say a big but on this, every paper had reporters for something they called the race beat. Reporters who would cover the civil rights movement in detail, so people know what was going on. They didn't always get the stories right, but the race beat was a real beat. They also had labor reporters. There was a labor beat back then. Are you kidding me? No paper now has a labor beat. And that means all the things that are happening in this country that do involve struggle, they get muzzled in a way that in previous generations they would not. And that in and of itself is scary. The right wing has figured out the media in one respect, and without social media, I think we would be actually lost for all of its problems.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, I think we got a point to the 1996 Telecommunications Act. That was the game changer that consolidated all media. Back then, you couldn't own more than 40 radio stations. It killed black radio, that act. So you'd have local black radio because you could have these local stations because there was the 40 cap. Now you couldn't. Now it became homogenized. It changed music overnight. It changed sports reporting overnight. And all just a handful of people control everything. So you don't know what's going on locally. And that was going on for a while until social media sort of made an invasion into that. And now they're trying to ban that, starting with TikTok.
How much of the banning of TikTok has to do with Palestine?
100%.
Yeah.
Because they say it's about China.
Yeah. Mitt Romney was caught on tape admitting it, though.
Yeah, so you're saying that's not true. When they say we're doing this to protect our kids from China.
They're saying it. There was a Mitt Romney was on
tape. No, I meant you in the general, world.
You got it. Yep.
Yeah, I know you're not saying that. That's for darn sure. But
I want to ask you something, Dave.
Please.
We're winding down. I want to ask you something. There's a lot of chatter right now about what President Biden should do. Should he step down to let somebody up? That's been the chatter. You have different politicians that are saying that they think that he should step down. You know, I think Hakeem Jeffries and a few. You know, there's been politicians that have been pushing him to step aside. How could that work? Like, what is your take on that? Do you think that should happen? What are you thinking?
I mean, I'll give my two cents right here. I think it absolutely needs to happen. I think it needs to happen for Vice President Kamala Harris. This is not to say I agree with Kamala Harris on policy. Not for a second. You know, I'm one of those people who raised real objections to her history when she was the law enforcement officer in chief, in the state of California, and some of the things that she pursued at that time. So it's frankly, it's less about Vice President Kamala Harris and more about the kind of movement we're going to need to stop Trump. And I don't think Kamala Harris is maybe the best person, but I think she is a far, far better choice for leading that fight than Joe Biden. I mean, I'm just going to be very frank about this. Like, it's less about age than what age does to the human being. Because there are people in my life who are older than Joe Biden who I would trust to run this country. Like people who are tip top, people who are doing their thing. And when I see Joe Biden, you know, I don't see the ability to run the kind of campaign that's going to be needed to slow down Donald Trump. And that's what I think the thing that the Democratic Party needs to be thinking about right now. And I think Joe Biden is really flawed because of the positions on Israel-Palestine and the wholehearted support that he has had for the state of Israel and this genocidal war in Palestine. It cuts him off from the very people he needs to win this election. Chuck, what are your two cents on that, on the Biden step down?
Yeah, on your last point, if the Biden supporters really wanted him to do better in polling, they'd tell him to end the genocide, not because they want it for human rights, because it would pragmatically help him when 150 countries want a ceasefire, when 80% of Democrats want a ceasefire. Imagine going against 80% of your base, independents as well, even a slight majority of Republicans. So listen, let's say I'm an unconditional Biden supporter. That's what I would have been trying to do. Now we're in a place, let the data tell us. The data tells us that 77% of independents, the most malleable voters, want him to step down. 65% of Democrats, his own base, want him to step down. So forget what I think. That is what the base and the people think. So he's in a losing race. What I would like to see, Cornel West, Jill Stein, and Claudia De La Cruz get together, get in a room and get together and make some inroads. You're not going to like what I'm going to say, but I've already almost chalked up that Trump will be the next president. Nobody wants to hear that, but this is what the Democratic Party has done. So I would like to see 5%, at least 5% of the vote go to a third party to make some inroads, because I don't see a way forward. And the last thing I'll say with this, there's such a thing as losing wealth. Barry Goldwater lost in a landslide to Lyndon Johnson, but impacted the next 50 years of Southern strategy by going racist, scorched earth, and all the presidents after him came in dominoes. Donald Trump just lost an election, but he has had more of an effect in losing and galvanizing people. All these racism and bigotry that have gone on the last 4 years under Biden, part of a movement of moving people. But the Democrats, they run John Kerry's and Walter Mondale's and Al Gore's. So when you lose, you don't get any movement benefit. You could have had that maybe with Bernie Sanders. If Bernie either won, then he wins. And if he lost, yet it had a surge of movement, even as a loser, that changes politics later. But Democrats always lose bad as well, rather than say, let's maybe build a movement.
Mm. And Etan, your thoughts, Biden stepping aside?
Yeah, I mean, I hear your points. I understand it. My concern is, is it too late now? I mean, I don't know what, you know, you're looking at the other people that could step in, and that, I don't know. I question if it's too late, you know, at this point. I am not sure. That's a tough call, to be honest with you. But then I look at Trump, and I look at the spectacle that was the RNC. Looking at, I don't know if y'all are watching it, but I kind of forced myself to watch it. And you know, I'm reading Project 25. Reading the 47. I'm reading the things that they have lined out that they want to do and implement, and It's tough. Like, I don't understand how anyone can read those things and see those plans and still have doubts that this person does not need to be anywhere near the White House. And
yeah,
that's the part that I struggle with, because this, I mean, they made their own case of why, when I say they, you know, Trump administration made their own case of why they don't need to be there. You know, of course, I wish it was a Trump, and I said it from the beginning. If there was anybody else, you know what I mean?
Well, that's a, I hear you there. Yo, Chuck, Etan, great show this week, man. Thank you both for coming in. Etan, thank you. I almost said playing injured because coming in on the phone, but but you were great, man. Thank you so much. In
July 24th.
Circumstances.
DZ, oh. July 24th.
Shoot, that was on my agenda. That was on my agenda.
Speaking. Arrest Netanyahu. Everybody is coming to D.C. because Netanyahu will be here next week in front of Congress. They're about to issue warrants for his arrest in the next 2 weeks. It's just been announced by the ICC. We're all coming to D.C. to get Netanyahu arrested and have a red line of going around that White House, or around that Capitol, I should say. We should not have a criminal in this being welcomed in America. So show up. War criminal, next Wednesday. Show up.
Next Wednesday. Everybody needs to be there. Yo, thank you, everybody, for listening to us here on The Collision. Please stay frosty. We are out of here. Peace. I was in a frenzy in a horny state, but I couldn't drop out.
Albert Hedab returns to WPFW beginning Monday, July 29th. 2 a.m. till 5 a.m. with Music Memories. The best of old school from the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Yes, the return of Alvin Nedab on 89.3 WPFW-FM. Monday, July 29th, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
The Birchmere welcomes Lady Smith Black Mambazo, Tuesday, July 30th. Nelson Mandela titled them South Africa's cultural ambassadors to the world. Details at birchmere.com.
Greetings. WPFW is pleased to announce the relaunch of our major donor program, now known as the Jazz and Justice Circle. If you gave $1,000 last year or so far this year, you are automatically enrolled in this cherished group of listener members, and we thank you. Benefits of your membership are at wpfwfm.org under the Support Us tab at the top of the homepage is the Jazz and Justice Circle. Interested in joining this select group? Please consider a donation of $1,000 or more online at wpfwfm.org. Your donation helps WPFW build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
WPFW presents Democracy Now!'s coverage of the Republican National Convention, Monday, July 15th through Friday, July 19th at 11 a.m. It is your support that makes this possible. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
The Institute for Policy Studies, the Wallace Global Fund, and The Nation invite you to their first annual Henry A. Wallace Symposium, Countering American Fascism, Lessons from Organizing in the U.S. Heartland, on Monday, July 22nd from 6:30 to 8 p.m. Speakers include National Affairs Correspondent for The Nation, John Nichols, Salma Arias of People's Action, and IPS Executive Director Tope Falerin. That's Countering American Fascism, Lessons from Organizing in the U.S. Heartland, Monday, July 22nd, 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the 14th and V Streets Busboys and Poets. More information and how to RSVP can be found online, ips-dc.org/events/countering-american-fascism.
WPFW, your station for jazz and justice, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
African Diaspora International Film Festival and Africa World Now Project hosts the 17th Annual African Diaspora International Film Festival, D.C., August 2nd to the 4th at the George Washington University Student Center, featuring fiction and documentary films, receptions, and Q&As. ADIFF D.C. from August 2nd to the 4th at the George Washington University Student Center. Tickets and schedule at nyadiff.org or 212-864-1760. ADIFF, where Black Life Matters. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hello, WPFW.
Summertime is here. Words, Beats, and Life and Arts for Everybody have the event for your family and friends this season. D DMV Made Festival is happening Saturday, July 27th on the National Mall, a one-day celebration of the D.C., Maryland, Virginia region, promoting the intersections of arts and culture, plus health and wellness. Featuring musical acts, Chuck Brown Band, Sweet Honey and the Rock, Substantial, Belladonna, DuPont Brass, and just added, the Blackbirds, celebrating 50 years of their classic, Rock Creek Park, plus four more music and dance stages, Family Fun Zone, Poetry and Storytelling Pavilion, live art installations, hands-on workshop tent, and health and wellness pavilion. Free to the entire community. July 27th on the National Mall. DMV May.